I hope you guys have a great time today. And our first speaker on steps 1, 2, and 3 is Jerry. And it's time for Jerry to come on up.
I'm Jerry Lobo. I'm an alcoholic. And it's great to be here. I'm really glad Soberilla is on this side. I kept hearing about it, but never been able to go. Thank you for sharing that, Dan, about being struck sober, because I had a similar experience. You know, it's by God's grace, the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, great sponsorship and loving friends. I haven't had to pick up the drink since the 30th of June, 1995. And, you know, for that, I'm extremely grateful. I'm a member of the Walsingham group, and they're all up here. And I really love that group. My sponsor is here. My sponsor, John, is here tonight, this morning. And I think he's just here to fact check me, really. So, and of course, my loving wife, Terry. She's not one of us, but she supports us 3,000%. And I'm really grateful she's here. You know, Dan told me that I'm going to do the first three steps. I have 45 minutes to do it in, or else I'm going to get the sky hook. So I don't want the sky hook. I'm going to read something out of the big book, because I love the big book. And this is a good starting point for me. And you've heard it a million times. Please bear with me. And this tells my story. Men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. The sensation is so elusive that while they admit it is injurious, they cannot after a time differentiate the true from the false. To them, the alcoholic life seems the only normal one. They are restless, irritable, and discontent until they can again experience a sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks. Drinks which they see others take with impunity. After they have succumbed to the desire again, as so many do, and the phenomenon of craving develops, they pass through the well-known stages of spree, emerging remorsefulness with a firm resolution not to drink again. This is repeated over and over, and unless this person can experience an entire psychic change, there's very little hope of his recovery. You know, that paragraph pretty much describes my 29 years of my drinking. And if I would have worked the first three steps, you know, I would just present someone with that paragraph. But let me tell you a little bit about myself. If you haven't figured out, I was born in India. You know, I lived there for 19 years. I was I grew up two miles from the Arabian Sea. Great life. I'll tell you what I was a spoiled brat. You know, everything I ever wanted was presented to me. You know, the book talks about this underlying discontent and discontentment with life, being irritable. And I remember I was born that way. You know, I had everything to live for, everything. Most kids my age didn't have what I had. I grew up in the Bollywood area, if you're familiar with Bollywood. That's the equivalent of Hollywood. I went to school with directors' sons and daughters, and it was just a phenomenal time for me. But I was always that underlying feeling of, man, there's something not right. And this is way before I knew what alcohol was. You know, I just didn't know what it was. I've had an incredible relationship with God, you know, since I was a kid. I grew up in a certain religion. I remember going to church, sitting down there as a little child and praying to God and asking him, what's the matter with me? I don't know what's the matter with me. You know, there's this hole in me. I don't want for anything. And how do you explain to your parents that there's something going on with you when you're 5 or 6 years old, you know, when pretty much they're going to say, what do you want? You've got everything you need as a child. My mom and dad had passed away, but they weren't alcoholics. I have four sisters who aren't alcoholics. They're all squeaky clean, have a drink once in a while here and there. You know, I landed up as an alcoholic. I You know, this went on for a few years of mine, and when I was about 14 years old, my dad had this little bar that he used to open up in the house, that when people came over and he used to open up this bottle of wine at Christmas, and he used to give everyone a shot, and then he used to recork the bottle and open it up at Easter again. And between Christmas and Easter, I used to start converting wine into water. I remember when I took my first drink. I remember when I took my first drink, because all that irritability and everything, discontentment with life, just went away. I mean, it just vanished. I took that first drink, and I'm sure you can relate to this. It went down, and it came up, and I felt warm, and I felt needed, and I felt a part of life. For once in my life, I felt a part of. 14 years old. And when that happens to you, you know, you have to chase it. And I'm just going to whiz through as much as I can in these. And what happens when you find a high that takes care of this internal condition? You know, we call it a spiritual malady. I only knew about what was going on with me when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. It's a spiritual malady. And a spiritual malady is, you're right in the middle of everything that's wonderful, and all you see is the gray clouds. And man, that was a revelation when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, that was my problem, and you know, growing up. After I picked up my first drink, it was like, yes, I've landed. I started looking much better. I could talk to people. You know, the normal things you hear from recovering alcoholics. You know, I felt like I was in the stream of life. And, you know, this continued. And of course, you know, the devastation that comes with a practicing alcoholic, you know, I hurt people who were the closest to me. I ruined their lives. You know, I ruined their lives. And they didn't know what to do with me. So they did what my mom and dad did, what good parents do. They thought if they removed me from the situation, things would be, things would be fine. And so when I was 19 years old, my father came to me and said, listen, there's a school in Tampa, Florida. Would you like to go there? And at that time, I just hated life. I hated India. I knew India was the cause of all my problems. I am drinking like crazy, just stealing, doing all the stuff that we talk about in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, classic alcoholic and addict. I came to the United States when I was 19 years old, and you know that geographic changes don't help my situation. I started going to school. Thank God I was pretty decent at school. Gotten with guys that I if you give me a lineup of 10 guys to choose roommates from, I'm intuitively going to choose the alkies, you know. And I landed up with a couple of roommates who were just like me. I used to go to school in the morning, and come 5 o'clock in the evening, they used to say, hey Jerry, you want to go for a couple of beers? And I used to say yes, and the next thing I know, it's 2 o'clock in the morning. That paragraph explains the allergy and the manifestation of my obsession. And don't know how I got there. It's 2 o'clock in the morning. I go to bed at about 3, and you know, if you go to bed drunk at 3 o'clock or 4 o'clock in the morning, at 7 o'clock in the morning, you're still very drunk. And I used to wake up at 7 o'clock and did exactly what the big book says. I'm full of remorse. I hate myself. I look at myself in the mirror and say, you know what, tonight I'm going to be a good guy. I am going to come home, and I'm going to do my homework and eat a good meal, watch some TV, and go to bed. I come home the next day at 5 o'clock. Hey Jerry, do you want to go for a couple? And before I can even say no, something in me says yes. You know, that's the That's the alcoholic. You know, I don't know why I do that. You know, it took me to come to Alcoholics Anonymous to find out that even when I'm not drinking, I have this obsession. Even when I'm not drinking, my life is only taking, that low-lying irritability, discontentment is only taken care of by putting another drink in me, you know? And never knew that. I never knew that. So this is going on. To be an alcoholic, you don't have to drink every day. I used to be a binge drinker. I used to drink about 2 months every day like crazy and then not drink 2 months or a month. And then within those 2 months that I was not drinking, I used to be absolutely pissed off all the time, you know. It was that spring, you know, that spring that used to tighten and everything starts bothering me. Life is starting to get to me. Things are piling up on me. I can't handle life. But no, I'm not going to drink because I made that promise, you know. And then the only thing that fixes that for me is I pick up another drink and the insanity continues, you know. We were powerless over alcohol, that our lives were unmanageable. You know, my life was totally, totally unmanageable. I didn't even know it. So what do I do as an alcoholic to, you know, to try to get past this? And you know, we're doing crazy stuff. We're going out to bars, and I was going to an international school at that time. And you know, just a little few highlights here. All my friends were from different countries, and we used to go out to bars and do some crazy stuff. But and we used to go there and pretend we couldn't talk English, and you know, and they used to say things like "Welcome to America," you know, and really loud. And I want to tell you folks, if someone can't speak English, talking louder and slower to them doesn't make them understand English. But you know, my friends used to have a few drinks. We used to get a little rowdy a little bit, and they used to go home, and I used to stay on. You know, and I used to stay on, and they got to a point where they said, "We really can't hang out with you, man." They said, "We drink, but you drink plus, and you get really crazy when you drink." And they stopped going out with me, and I used to. And towards the end of my drinking, I was that guy, you know, who sat at the bar with a little pile of money, you know, all by himself, in his mind, thinking that, yeah, you know, everything's fine. And the bartender comes back and comes to you, and he asks you what you want to drink, and I tell him, and he reaches in and takes your money, and then he comes back, and then without asking you, he knows exactly what you want to drink. And he reaches in and takes how much he needs, and in your mind is, wow, I've landed. I don't even have to order my own drink. My bartender knows what I want to drink. And you know, you see us all over the place. It's that guy sitting in the corner of the bar, you know, just smiling to himself. You know, I'm talking to my mythical friend, right? I know you've all been there. And it got really bad. And so when things get really bad, I always look for a solution outside me. You know, I always look for a solution outside me. I had cut off all ties with everyone from India, and I was only talking to my family and a few other people because I hated India, of course, which, as you know, it's a myth. I was on campus, and I see this Indian girl walk by, and I thought it was a sign from God, because I'm into signs, right? And I stalked this poor girl for about 3 months, and I convinced her to marry me, and she agreed. You know, and I got married, and I'd like to say that started the six worst years of her life, you know. And I always have good intentions, and my intention was to be a good man and a good husband and to come and provide for our family. That was the intention, but man, I have a problem with delivery, you know? I really have a problem with delivery, and I kept doing the same thing. And when you're married, it's kind of really difficult to go out and hang out with the boys like two or three times a week, you know. It gets to be a problem with the wife, you know, and I'm doing the same thing. I'll be right back, just a couple with the guys, and next thing I'm 2 o'clock in the morning. You know, I come home, you know, there's a little comforter in the living room on the floor, you know. I get the message, that's where I'm sleeping. And, you know, it's the craziness. The craziness continues. I had spurts of being a good husband, but alcohol and my alcoholism never ever allowed me to be. I did things that were embarrassing. You know, talk about an unmanageable life. When I was drunk in our marriage, I used to hide our bills. And so when you're sober and you can't find your bills, you don't have bills, right? So this is going on in my marriage. Just to throw in a funny here, how embarrassing I really was to my wife. We were out in New York, and I never ever shared this for many years because I was too embarrassed to even share this story. But now I can share it with impunity. We were in New York one weekend with her office folk and all her leaders and all the foo-foo people. And, you know, I tied one on really bad. And at 9 o'clock in the morning, I was really, really drunk that day. And we were supposed to go to Staten Island and take the ferry there. And for some reason that morning, I thought I was in San Francisco. And while we were passing by the Statue of Liberty, I look over and I said, look, Alcatraz. And have you ever got the look in your life? I know I used to get it frequently. Have you ever got the look that people look at you and say, do they really allow people like you to walk freely on this earth? I used to get that look a lot. And you know, so the marriage is just going crazy, right? Because I'm not being a husband. And this is what's happening. I mean, the bills are not getting paid. You know, she's working, I'm working sometimes. Midway through the marriage, she says, if you ever get a DUI, I'm out of here. And of course, the fear of losing someone never ever fazed me. Never ever fazed me. And besides, an Indian woman never leaves an Indian man. I'm here to tell you folks, that's wrong. They will dump your butt in a heartbeat. So, but anyway, 10th of June, 1995, fast forward. I'm doing that thing, I'm out and about. I go to the bar, do what I've done all the time. It's 2 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday. I get into my car and I do what I cringe to think of what I did for all those years. I got onto US 19, and after about 5 minutes, I realized I was driving the wrong way. That'll sober you up really quick. And so I turned around, and for some reason, and I believe it was God that day, for some reason I saw a street come out of US 19, and I turned on that street, and there was no street. And my truck got stuck in the ditch. 2 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday, bad time to be drunk. I'm putting the truck in reverse. There's grass and mud and all kinds of stuff just flying all over the place. Within 2 minutes, a friendly Clearwater cop came to help me. And of course, you know what happened. At that time, they didn't have dashboard cams, so they were doing those big camcorders. If any of you are graduates of DUI school about 28 years ago, you'll know what I'm talking about. And they started filming me, and of course, I was arrested. I did what macho men do. You know what macho men do when they're drunk and they get into trouble? They do two things. They either call mom, or they start crying. So I took option B. I'm crying, 29 years old, nothing to show for, emptiness galore, and I'm crying. They took me to 49th Street Jail, never been to jail before. They put me into a room. They put me into a cell with this guy who must have seen me coming from miles away. He was a veteran of jails. I could just see it in his eyes. I was really, really scared. And he came up to me and he said, you're going down, man. And then he said, they're going to put you away for a long, long time. You know, I was terrified. I started crying. I got bailed out of jail. I went home, and my former wife, just as she had promised, she was sitting on that couch with her suitcase. She walked out. I walked in, and she never ever came back, you know. And my world crashed in on me. It was the 11th of June, 1995. By a series of events, my sisters were down from Canada. They picked up the Yellow Pages. I know a lot of you guys don't even know what the Yellow Pages are, but we had a thing called the Yellow Pages. She called AA for me, and she handed me the phone. And I've done the helpline since getting sober. I know what people talk about on the helpline. And the guy came on the helpline. He really wanted to help me. And I started telling him what a good guy I was, and how my wife had just left, and how could she? And he waited for me to take a breath. And he jumped in and he said, well, you know, there's a meeting down the street from you, and if you hurry, you're gonna get there in time. And he hung up on me. It kind of frosted me a little bit that I wasn't that important to him. I showed up for my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous on the 11th of June, 1995. I went to the Rogate group, that's where I got sober. And my dear friend Judy was at my first meeting, so I've known Judy for umpteen years. I didn't want to be there. I just thought I'd be there for a stint, you know, just passing through. And, you know, they asked, of course, when there's a newcomer in the room, they'll ask you. And I put up my hands because there was another guy who put up his hands. And I said I was new. And, of course, when you're new, everyone talks to you, right, directly at you. This guy looks at me and he says, you know, Jerry, you're the most important person in the room. And I remember thinking to myself, you're damn right I am. You know, I don't know. At the end of the meeting, they said, you want a white chip? I said, sure. I went up there. I picked up my first white chip on the 11th of June. And I don't know why I had to say something, but I told them, I said, you know what? My wife's going to realize what she did, and she's going to be back in a couple of weeks. And then I'll come back and give you your white chip. And everyone in the room said, keep coming back. And I realized what keep coming back means. It means you need AA more than you think you need AA. I'd like to tell you I stayed sober right away after the 11th of June, but I drank for about another 2 or 3 weeks after that. And I went for meetings every day. And I went to the bar after that. And if anyone's going through that, that's not the way to stay sober. But if that's your passage into AA, you keep doing that till you're touched by the hand of God. And I mean that. And on the 29th of June, 1995, I had just come from an AA meeting, and Dan said he was struck sober. And I want to relate my experience to you. I had come from an AA meeting, and I was at that bar, and that was 2 for 1 that night, so I ordered 4 rum and cokes. They were on the bar. I had stirred it up. I had squeezed those little limes in there. I had not taken a sip. I had a friend with me, and she was asking me, you know, she was just talking to me. She's not an alcoholic. She was just a friend of mine and me at that time. And, you know, my wife had left at that time. She had been divorced for a few months, and I thought we had a future together. So I was doing the footwork. You know, I was talking to her, and I'm telling her about this AA meeting that I'd come from. And she looks at me and says, are you allowed to drink when you go for those meetings? And I well up inside, you know, and I welled up when I heard Dan say, and I look at her and I say, no, I've been fooling those people all along. And I stepped off that bar stool, and those 4 drinks were left, and I've never had to pick up a drink again. You know, I believe I was struck sober. I really was, you know, and I felt so embarrassed for a long time to tell anyone that, until I heard people like Dan, and there was another guy who came up to me after I shared and said, you know what, the same thing happened to me. One second I was a drunk, and the next second I wasn't. And, you know, and I know in everyone's life, there's a microsecond in our lives where something different happens. And if you look back on your sobriety, you can almost pinpoint that moment where you were a drunk and then you were not. And I believe it was the hand of God that reached inside of me and flicked that little switch that only alcohol can fix, you know. And it was amazing. It was really amazing, you know. And I walked away from that bar stool, not wanting to drink, but not knowing what to do, whether I wanted to be in AA or not. You know, there was so much confusion in my life, you know. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. And, as I said, I'd like to go back when I was a little child. I've always had this great relationship with God, you know, and that second step is so beautiful. And our big book gives us so many avenues to get to that higher power. It's amazing. I reread this because whenever you speak, you got to reread this stuff because we get so used to it, you know. And I reread that stuff, and it's, if anyone's having, you know, a hard time with this higher power, don't. I know it's an extremely difficult thing to explain, especially coming from someone who's got a higher power. You know, our book gives us so many choices, you know. In our book it says you just got to be willing. You can use the group as your higher power. It has to be something outside you, something greater than you and outside you, because, you know, I know for a fact, looking back on my life, not only with the drinking, that the solution never comes from the mind that has caused the problem. You know, I am the problem, but I'm not the solution. And you can't come to that point until you're absolutely desperate, you know. And sober, 2-3 years sober, I did the absolute minimum. I did the stuff, but I did the absolute minimum. And, I did the absolute minimum. And you reach a stage, what we call in Alcoholics Anonymous, stark raving sober, where you're sitting at meetings, you know, you're mouthing off the stuff, you're doing the work, it's not that bad, but that little furnace is kind of brewing within you, you know, it's still there. And, I had this God, and I had to fine-tune my God, you know, and that's the beauty about finding a God of your understanding. It's not anyone else's God. It can be a religious God. It can be whatever you want it to be. Alcoholics Anonymous is so cool. It's like custom making your God. You know, if you're having a hard time with it, custom your God. You can, you know, your God can, I'm going to take a little bit of goodness and a bit of love and a little bit of courage and a little bit of hope and make that your higher power. And that's all you have to do, you know. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves. And my sponsor, I've had two sponsors, John and Bill. And when I got sober, Bill said, the fact that you're an alcoholic is not your fault. But now that you know you're an alcoholic, you're fully responsible for your own recovery. You know, I hate that word, responsibility. I want you to do it and I want to feel better. And, but that's what he said. He also told me about a thing called acting your way into good thinking. He says we can't think our way into good action. We got to act our way into good thinking. And the last thing that stayed with me all my life in recovery, he talked about surrender. And surrender is the decision to do sobriety someone else's way, because my way is just not working, you know. And what does surrender look like? Surrender, if you're struggling in AA or if you're new in AA and you don't get it and you're having a hard time getting it, it's about surrender. And surrender means doing things you don't want to do. It means going to meetings that you don't want to go to. It means talking to people you just absolutely can't stand in the rooms. It means shaking hands with someone you don't want to shake hands to. And this is the great miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous. When we do things we don't want to do, the light gets a little brighter, you know. It's amazing. It's miraculous. You know, it just blows me away. When I'm stuck, if I just do things I don't want to do, go for a meeting when you don't want to, the light gets a little bit brighter, you know? And so I reconnect with this God. I've redefined this God of mine. Incredible. And we got so much leeway about this God. It says, he's the director. We are his agents. That can be a relationship with the higher power. It says, he is the father. We are his children. I like that. I had an amazing father. I had an amazing dad, you know, and I've taken that God that I've always known, and I've had some dad qualities to him. And, you know, my dad gave me a good life, and my God gives me a good life. And my dad didn't, you know, he gave me what I needed, you know, and he gave me some chores. And if I didn't do it, I didn't get what was promised. And that's what happens with the big guy, I think, you know. So if anyone's having a hard time with that, don't, you know. You've just, it's all about the surrender. And if you've never done that, just get down on your knees and just surrender, you know. And it's been that way for me. A little bit of surrenders, you know, all the way. And which now brings me to step three. You've just done step one. You've admitted you were powerless over alcohol. You've got an unmanageable life. We all know that. You know, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. The sanity they're talking about is not clinical. They're talking about the fact that, and you can look back into your life in your drinking, it's whenever I'm sober, the insane part is I go out and pick up a drink and I forget what happened to me. You know, that's the insanity of alcoholism. I forget what happens to me when I drink, and after a period of sobriety, I go back out and I pick up a drink, and the cycle starts all over again. It sets up the allergy, it sets up the craving, and I'm off and running again. You know, I got this God, I got everything, and it brought me to the third step, which said, made a decision to turn my will and my life to the God of my understanding, right? So, will in my life, thoughts and actions, it's a critical point in our recovery, because you're getting ready to take that plunge. You're getting ready to do steps 4 through 9, which in my estimates are the power steps, right? They steps 4 through 9 reset your life. They get you, I don't wanna go into another presentation, but steps 4 and 5 get you okay with yourself. Steps 6 and 7 get you okay with God. And steps 8 and 9 get you okay with the world. A spiritual person, mind whose spirituality is being in harmony with myself, with God, and another human being, right? That's what step 4 and 4 through 9 do. And when I look at the steps, it goes exactly how I think. And it gives me exactly what I need. So when I finally get dropped off at the end, I'm close to God. It's guaranteed. Anyway, so I'm doing this. I'm doing the minimum. I'm getting some of the results, but not many. And 2 or 3 years sober, I'm a bit crisp, you know, a bit crisp. I'm happy, but not entirely. And I talked to Bill, and Bill... you know, Bill kind of said, you know, you got a free miracle, a gift here. And if you keep going the way you're going, you just might throw away this free gift, he says. And he says, you know, but I can help you. I can help you if you let me help you some more. And, you know, the dam broke. And, you know, those 3 years of having some kind of iffy sobriety, thank God I didn't drink, but iffy sobriety, that dam broke, and I recommitted to Alcoholics Anonymous about 3 years sober. And, you know, that's made all the difference in my life. You know, that commitment, that total, here I am, you know. And I think we all need to do that. We really all need to just, you got to come to a point where you're so desperate in Alcoholics Anonymous to get some relief. See, it's not the drink, because at that time I'm dry. it's my mind, you know. And you can get away from a drink, you can't get away from your mind, you know. And that mind's talking to me, and it's telling me when I go home from meetings, they're going to find out. They're going to find out who you are. You've not been totally honest with them, you know. And 3 years sober, dam breaks, I commit to Bill, and we started this journey all over again, you know. And we did a third step. We did a third step on our knees. Amazing. It was the most amazing thing that I could have ever done, was do a third step on my knees. And Bill told me a couple of things. He said, I want you every day, and I already started doing that, but he said, I want you every day to get on your knees and say that third step prayer. And I listened to that man. And I've never gotten off my knees ever since that day, you know. And every morning, I get on my knees and I say that third step prayer, because what happens is when I say that third step prayer, it's me giving my thoughts and my actions, my will and my life, for only for today. It's not the rest of your life. It's only for today. My deep desire is to tell God that here I am, you know, that I'm going to try and do your will through this day. I'm going to allow you to guide me through this day. And I go out and I screw things up, but I can always come up and try again, you know, as long as I don't drink, you know. And that's the beauty of, of this third step. We have a God of our understanding, this loving God, loving. And even if you don't understand this God, you don't need to. He'll come to you. So don't struggle if you're struggling, you know. This God will reveal himself to you. You just got to be open and willing and know that there's a better life in recovery than there ever was, being drunk. And, after we took the third step prayer, things started lightening up in my life, you know, and things are amazing. I want to, if you'll humor me, I know I'm almost getting down to the wire here. If you'll humor me, just for today, I think I've always wanted to do that. And to end my talk, what I'd like to do is maybe we can all say the third step prayer, if you're up to it. And if you've never done this third step prayer, just close your eyes and listen to the energy in the room. And I hopefully you'll never be the same once you leave here if you're struggling. And I know a lot of you guys do the third step prayer every day, but let's do it, okay? We'll have a little silence. We'll say the third step prayer, and we'll see what happens. Let me turn that page here so I don't mess it up. Okay, can we just have one quick moment of silence, please? I set aside everything I know about you, about the world, and about myself for a better relationship with you, God, and myself and the world. Third step. God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. Yes, awesome. Thank you so much. It's, there's a line right under that third step, which a lot of us just skim over. He says, and it says, we thought well before taking this step, making sure we were ready that we could at last abandon ourselves utterly to him. The key word is utterly, you know, it's absolutely. So I know we talk about the three little frogs and Alcoholics Anonymous, and they're sitting on the log, and you know, if one makes a decision to jump, how many logs, frogs are still on the log, and it's still three because they've just made a decision, and that sounds really ducky. But you got to get off that log, you know, soon enough. You got to get off that log and take that dive, because those three little frogs on that log are probably back at the bar because they've done the 1, 2, 3. And if you find yourself doing the 1, 2, 3, dive off that log, my friends, you know. It's been great. I work the rest of the steps. I sponsor people. I have a sponsor. My sponsee is here, Kevin, great guy. I do a lot of service work. Alcoholics Anonymous has changed my life, you know, and I'm gonna wind it down here. And I just want to say, I don't know much, folks, but I do know three things for absolutely sure. One is that we've got an amazing God. Two is that if I don't pick up a drink, I can never get drunk. And three is that if I live and work these steps, what happens and results is an amazing life. And so I'm really looking forward to spending the day here with you and listening to our next three speakers on some of the other steps. And thank you so very much for having me. Thank you.